I'm Mike Breen, Public Awareness Officer for the American Mathematical Society, and I'm talking with David Neelan, who's Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, Institute of Geophysics and Planetary Physics at UCLA, the University of California, Los Angeles. David, I noted on your webpage it says that you are very interested in tropical climate variability. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I've been working on tropical climate variability for quite some time now. For instance, one of the largest sources of natural variability in the tropical atmosphere ocean system is El Nino, which we worked quite a bit on figuring out in the mid-80s, early 90s, how that works, how the feedbacks between the way that the rainfall and winds over the tropical oceans down in the Pacific near the equator change when the sea surface temperature changes underneath them, causes changes in the ocean currents, which feedback on the sea surface temperature to produce a never-ending cycle of warmings and coolings along the equator in the eastern Pacific.
El Nino, that was something that we haven't heard about for a long time, and now it's a fairly regular thing. That's something that if you talk about in a conversation, people would recognize it. Are we at the point now where we can predict when they will happen and how much significance they'll carry with them?
That's right. Essentially, a decade and a half ago, nobody had heard of it, and except for a handful of scientists who found this an interesting phenomenon and began to put together mathematical models that represented in terms of equations that you can solve on the computer, the movements of the upper layers in the ocean and the changes in the winds, rainfall, temperature, and so on in the atmosphere above it. And with those mathematical models, we were able to figure out how you can get something that looks very much like El Nino simulated on the computer. We were then able to take apart the things that contribute to it in nature by studying them in this computer laboratory. And then those same mathematical equations could be solved if you are observing the changes just below the surface in the tropical Pacific. You can put that information into your computer model and run it forward in time for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, even a year, and get reasonably accurate, although not perfect, predictions of what El Nino is going to do to almost a year in advance. And this sort of work was done, for instance, substantially in the universities, also some government laboratories. And then as our capability got to the point where these could be societally useful, that technology was turned over to the National Weather Service in the form of transferring the ability to write these mathematical prediction programs and solve them on the computer. And the National Weather Service actually changed its name to the National Center for Environmental Prediction because they realized they could predict more than just the weather and started issuing forecasts. And that's when it made it onto the radar of the general public. For a while, there was all these TV crews coming around asking, what is this El Nino thing? How come they're predicting it now? And that's basically the story. So now there's regular predictions, and it's something that influences the weather patterns on a seasonal basis in many parts of the world. So having the information about what state El Nino is in and what it's going to be doing over the next series of months is something that affects decisions made by individual members of society, by farmers, by people who are planning for hydroelectric power, sorts of things like this.
There's also an associated effect, La Nina. Do those two march in lockstep? Does knowing one help you figure out the other?
Yes, in fact, to a first approximation, La Nina is just the opposite of El Nino. If you imagine an area about twice the size of the continental U.S. down along the equator in the Pacific Ocean, extending from the coast of Ecuador past the Galapagos Islands, way out to almost to the dateline, when that region warms, that's called El Nino, and when it cools, that is, in other words, cooler than normal conditions or warmer than normal conditions, the cooler is La Nina, the warmer is El Nino.
Earlier, you talked about all the interactions that are involved. Is that the hardest part of predicting the climate, trying to handle all those feedback loops?
That's something that characterizes many things in the climate system, is that you get these complex interactions between different part of the the fluids that we live in, the air for the atmosphere and the water for the ocean. And there's a fairly general mathematical framework for putting equations for air or water into a computer model. You get additional complications when you have to take into account the fact that within the air there are water droplets condensing, which causes release of heat, as well as forming clouds. The clouds also do things like reflect sunlight and trap infrared radiation, as well as causing a warming through a deep layer in the atmosphere, and that warming affecting the temperature is going to affect the pressure gradients, is going to affect the winds. So being able to deal with this very complex system often requires developing new mathematical methods or adapting things that are being developed in applied mathematics into its applications in atmosphere and ocean sciences.
And are these equations, are those partial differential equations?
That's right. You would have in your computer model, you'd have a basic set of differential equations. If you imagine a box of air that's, say, 100 kilometers by 100 kilometers in the horizontal, say, east, west, and north-south directions, and then maybe a kilometer thick in the vertical, you would be putting in the balance of forces that would cause the winds in that box to accelerate or decelerate, you know, as they're affected by the pressure gradients, the rotation of the Earth, which causes something called the Coriolis force, and so on, a whole little list of effects, frictional effects. And you would couple that with an equation that tells you how the temperature is going to change based on the different fluxes of energy, heating by the sun, cooling by infrared radiation. I mentioned the release of heat in raindrops as they condense. You essentially put budgets for each of these things into your model, and this creates a set of coupled partial differential equations that you then time march forward as you compute what the wind, temperature, et cetera, is going to be, say, 10 or 20 minutes from now in each of 10 million boxes around the globe. And then you redo the computation for the next 10 or 20 minutes and so on until you get to the end of a year if you're making an El Nino forecast, or at the end of the century if you're trying to compute the effects of human release of greenhouse gases in global warming.
That's David Neelan, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UCLA. And in part two, David will talk more about the complexity of climate models and how knowing something about local or short-term weather can be extended to the long-term global climate models.